I am all in.
With Scott Patterson, an iHeartRadio podcast.
Welcome, everybody, to the first ever live virtual podcast. And I am Scott Patterson, and this is iHeartRadio and 111 Productions bringing you a Friendsgiving event. And we're all so happy and so pleased to have you join us. And thank you so much. We also want to say a portion of the proceeds are going to go benefiting the St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital and Baby to Baby, two causes that are and charities that are close to my heart. I've taken a bunch of tours through St. Jude's and other hospitals and to visit kids. And let me tell you something, there is nothing more rewarding and more satisfying than knowing that you can provide a little tiny bit of comfort for a kid on a specific day. And these are beautiful kids that need our help and beautiful families all pulling together for a great cause. So thank you very much for getting your tickets and joining in. Listen, I'm going to tease our guest here a little bit. We've got Jackson Douglas, who played Jackson Belleville in the series, 57 episodes. We've got Emily Carota, Mrs. Kim. We've got Sally Struthers, obviously played Babette, and Grantley Phillips, a town troubadour. And we are very, very, very excited. I want to thank my team, led by Amy Sugarman, Danielle Romo, Riley Pelusis, and there are others behind the scenes, Tamar and PR. I'm going to butcher her last name, so I'm not even going to attempt it. There's Easton Allen, who is our tech on this, and he does fantastic work. We are in cahoots now, Easton and I, doing secret things behind everybody else's back to surprise us, the rest of the team on the podcast. The following one's going to be quite a reveal, something that I have discovered in the show, one of those things that pops up every now and again. It's kind of like the clown pillow, but you'll have to download the next podcast series of podcasts to find out what it is. But it's a bombshell. I guarantee you that. Anyway, thank you all for joining us. And without further ado, and let me take these off because I got to get ready to talk to one of my favorite people in the whole world. Mr. And I think he's living in Spain now. So let's welcome Jackson Douglas. Jackson, come on in.
Hello.
There he is. How you doing, guy?
Doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing really good. Let me put my specs on too. You are not.
I know. Should I take mine off so you can't see that
leave
I'm?
Them, leave them on.
I've got my. I've got something else up on my computer that you can see in my glasses. No, yeah. I don't really. But
how you doing, pal?
I'm good.
Yeah.
It's crazy. And I'm not in Spain anymore.
Where are you?
I'm in Los Angeles. I'm back in Los Angeles.
All right. Okay. So yeah. You're back in LA. All right.
I got tired of paying for a house that I wasn't living in. So we decided to come back. We were only supposed to be gone for a year. We were only supposed to go for a year. And we got there and it was like a week into it. And we're like, oh my God, this is beautiful. I don't ever want to go back.
Right.
And then the election happened, which kind of, you know, helped me make my choice. But we didn't want to come back. So I don't know, at the end of a year, it takes you a year to get used to living somewhere else. You know what I mean? You got to find your store. You got to find your coffee shop. You got to find all that stuff. Mm-hmm. So you get used to it after a year. So we stayed for another year. And then we stayed for another year. And then another year. And then another year. And then COVID happened.
Right.
Wow. So, and then we decided, okay, we got to get back. The kids are getting old enough that they really need to have some roots where, you know, not to move anymore. So it was time.
So they're fluent? They're fluent in Spanish?
Yes, but they don't like to talk in Spanish because they're self-conscious about it.
Right.
You know, they're like, they will correct the hell out of me when I speak it wrong.
Right.
But, you know, and they know it. They can understand it. And if forced, they can speak. Yeah.
Yeah, my son corrects me all the time. He's only seven, but he's always. I call him the corrector
because
he's up my ass every day about something.
Well, it's because they finally have some power over you.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
you know. Yeah, so I give them that. I was like, okay, I'm the one who tells you when to go to bed, but you can tell me when I'm saying the wrong word. when I'm swearing incorrectly in Spanish.
Right. Let's get into the show. You did 57 episodes. What did you know about the role of Jackson when you got the part? I mean, did casting say anything to you? Anything about having the same name as the characters, things like that?
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, I think, you know, I went when the pilot was shot. I was in Toronto. And that's where I met Amy and Dan. And I think they were saying something about like, oh, you're funny. You should be on the show. And so they kind of put me in. And I think my name originally was supposed to be Crispin, but it was too close to Tristan. And so they said, oh, what the hell? Just call you Jackson. Why not? That's fine. Right. It works. Right. So
you're so yeah. you. You
can yeah, exactly.
That you were so you.
Yeah.
That it happened. All right. So why not just call you Jackson Douglas? Why Jackson Belleville? I don't guess.
I don't know. You know, maybe it's a legal thing. I don't know.
To probe the minds of those two. Good luck.
I know. Yeah, and and what's funny is I think there's even an episode where I was Melville, or the last name was Melville, and then it changed to Belleville. I don't know. There's a lot of controversy about that. I asked about that, and Dan just kind of blew me off. He's like,
I don't know.
Stop asking about that.
Every time I had to try to have a conversation with those two, I wear a miner's helmet with an extra white bulb on the helmet. You know,
it's about right. Yeah, so it's funny that you ask me, do you have any insight into any of that? It's like, do we ever? Do we ever have any insight into the why? No. Accept it and move on.
Exactly. Learn not to ask questions. Enter the craft service table and get the best food.
Go stand on your mark, say your words really fast, and be done.
Right.
We want to go home.
Well, that's the capper, man. So tell me, you know, how would you describe in your own words, not that you can use anybody else's.
Good try.
All right. In Pierce Brosnan's. In Arnold
Remington Steele or James Bond. Which
one? Pierce Brosnan. Gotta do Bond. Gotta do Bond.
All right. I'll do me because I'm really bad at voices.
How would you describe Jackson in your own words or Arnold Schwarzenegger's words or, you know?
I don't know. It was really an interesting role because I think it was just kind of the best way that I can describe it, at least the way I feel about it, is just a hyperbolized version of me. You know, it's funny how you would live life and they would all of a sudden end up in a script. I got named the president of the Homos Association, and a month later I was being elected the town selectman, you know. Because I don't know, Amy just seemed to think that my life was hilarious and just needed to use that for something. So, you know, although there are some differences, like when I get angry, I don't act like Jackson does when he gets angry.
Right.
I think Jackson's more of a, you can kind of laugh at his anger.
Right.
My kids, well, that's not true. Now my kids laugh at my anger too. So they don't take me seriously anymore. Now they just start laughing, which really doesn't do much for my anger. I don't know. I mean, it was a lot of fun to play. I mean, everybody, I don't know. It was so easy. I mean, the character was just so much fun. And I got along with everybody so well that it really did become effortless. The hardest thing was just to use somebody else's words, you know? It's like, oh, I wouldn't speak that way, but I've got to try and force my mouth to, you know, say it a certain way or.
And plus you get to, you know, work with Melissa McCarthy, for God's sake.
Well, yeah.
What was that like?
It didn't feel like work.
Right, exactly. Because we've said on the show, on the podcast, because I haven't seen the episodes, right? So I'm watching for the first time. It's the whole thesis of the podcast. And, you know, the talent on her from the very first moment you see her is so glaring and apparent and big and just like, wow. Did you see it too? You must have seen it, right?
I guess I felt it, you know, and I guess I'm really, really fortunate that I felt such a wonderful personal connection with her that I think if I were to, oh my God, I mean, now that you mention it, I kind of just got shivers how, if I looked at it the way that you described it, I think I would have been really intimidated and I don't think I would have been able to come even close, you know, I think, it was just, but she's just so, I mean, she's just so nice and warm and loving as a person that it's hard to be intimidated around her. You just kind of get in the role with it, you know?
She doesn't even know how funny she is.
No.
Or at least she didn't back then.
No.
I mean, she did some things. We did an interview together for, humorously enough, for ESPN. And they were all, you know, in the very beginning, so there we are seated together and our director's chairs, and there's ESPN, and they're, you know, and they asked us how we stayed in shape. And, you know, I said, well, you know, I run a little bit, I ski, you know.
Oh my God, are we supposed to stay in shape?
Walk up and down the stairs, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And then when they asked her, she immediately said, oh, I love the box, you know, and I thought she was kidding. And I let out a little bit of a laugh because just the way she inflects her words.
Right. Yeah.
And it's just naturally funny.
Mm-hmm.
And so she doesn't know. She's so quick.
Right.
And it, you know, the phrasing is so just beautifully timed that you can't help but not laugh.
Right.
Can you remember your favorite scene that you filmed with her? Now, if you answer correctly, I'll send you $50.
Oh, you mean there's a correct answer?
There is a correct
answer. Well, of course there's a correct answer, and it has to be, it's got to be my favorite scene. I would be the only one who would know the answer to that. I don't know. I mean, there were so many. We had a lot of fun when we did the pre-wedding hijinks, you know, where I was running around Balboa Park in a skirt, a kilt, but... you know, where we're doing photos and stuff like that. I think the one that really sticks out in my mind is when we decide to move in together or kind of get engaged. There's a picnic that we did, and it's like a bright, when you watch it on TV, you see it's a bright sunny day and we're having this picnic in the park, and it was 2:00 in the morning and pitch black outside, you know, and it was lit, night for day, and you wouldn't even know. And it was just so surreal. And but it really added something to the scene because it kind of took your headspace out of, you know, it became kind of, oh, I'm too old and my brain just drops words. Not ethereal, but it's, you know, it just kind of takes you out of yourself and out of the moment. And it felt very different and special.
Right. Do you remember the scene where she's chasing you through town?
Oh, yeah.
How many takes did you do on that? Do you
remember? Oh, my God. So many. Oh, my God. I was so sweaty and tired at the end of the day. And I think they had it after one. But, I think Amy and Dan just felt they just were laughing at my running and just wanted to, torture me.
Yep.
But it was fun. It was fun torture. I remember that one. That was good. Is that the correct answer? Is that one? Or is it deep fried shoe? Thanksgiving episode.
Unfortunately, you did not answer correctly.
So I don't get the $50.
Yeah, sorry.
And I buy my own dinner tonight.
But I will send you a bag of coffee. So you have to look forward to.
All right. I'll take the parting gift.
So we're only a handful of episodes into season two, and we're starting to see your romance with Melissa Groh, Soupy Groh. What type of direction did you receive when it came to you and Melissa in that regard?
I think, I don't think there was a lot. I don't think there was a lot of direction. There's one scene that I'm so embarrassed about that I just, even to this day, I cringe. And it's when we have our first child. And Jamie Babbitt was directing. And And so we're in the hospital, we've had the child, and I'm go up to her and I give her a big kiss or a big hug and a kiss. And she's like saying that. And she kept saying, you know, well, give her a kiss, give her a kiss. But I've never done an on-screen kiss before. And I know Melissa so well, it just felt so weird to have to fake this. And I just couldn't do it. I just couldn't. I end up giving her a great big hug. And I just feel like I failed as an actor that day. Failed so hard. How it would have been a really tender, you know, a wonderful, wonderful moment. But the person that is me just couldn't get over that, you know, over that. I don't know. It was really weird.
Maybe you took it in a direction that was unexpected and even more effective, more emotional in a way.
Maybe.
Yeah.
All right. I'll take that to kind of salve my guilt. But I think that's the only time that we really received some kind of, you know, a direction of do this or that. Right. I mean, a lot of it. God, I almost feel like a criminal, you know, getting paid to do the show because it was just so easy and natural that it just,
right,
you know?
Right. So what was it like to come back almost 10 years later for A Year in the Life?
That was very odd.
Yeah, it was. Right?
That was very odd. What did you think? I want to know what you thought about that. It was really odd.
Yeah, I didn't feel like him at all anymore. I'd gotten married, had a son. Took me a bit, you know, to get,
I had two kids and, you know, I can't remember if we were in Spain yet or not. I don't think so. But I had the same kind of feeling coming back to LA when I came back from Spain, where everything feels very familiar, but it's not familiar.
Right.
And it's that weird juxtaposition of, I should feel differently because I know my surroundings. I know these people. I know this stuff, but it's like I was in a coma for 10 years and just woke up and it's like, wait, do I know you anymore? So.
Okay. So we have a fan question for you, Jackson.
I see.
We have a Julie who wants to know the picture of pajamas that he wore in the episode. Were those his real photos on the pajamas?
It was my face, but I wasn't a wrestler. So they put my face on, funny enough, there was a dolly grip named Cal. Remember Cal?
Mm-hmm.
His son was a wrestler. So they took his picture, put my youth, my face from my youth on those and then put those on the pajamas.
Okay. All right.
So it's my face, but Cal's son's body.
Oh my God. Okay, so here's the big question, and you can redeem the $50.
Oh,
if you answer this correctly. Okay, oh. You ready? You ready? I want you to be comfortable. I want you to be ready. Okay. What are you most thankful for from Gilmore's, being that it's Friendsgiving and a Thanksgiving sort of a podcast right now, live event?
What am I most thankful for? I think I'm thankful for the opportunity to get to know so many wonderful people and just to, you know, I feel so lucky and thankful and grateful to be able to do it. You know, I mean, just to meet everybody, everybody was so wonderful. We really were like a family.
Yeah.
You know, there's some of us that would fight with each other. There's some of us that would, you know, we'd get along great, just like any other family. But you still felt loved, and you could love other people. And so that really was magical for me.
Hang on. I'm getting New York is typing in. They're deciding.
They're wondering if that's right or not.
Oh, wait a minute. Hang on, Jackson. Hang on a second. Hang on a second. I've got the head of the whole thing. Buddy, we're good. Correct answer.
Yes, correct answer. Right. Good. Okay.
You got the $50.
Yay. All right.
Wait a minute.
That's
hang
about
on.
One DoorDash order, and that's
sorry,
about
no,
it.
No, it's a, no? They're coupons.
Oh, okay.
Your coupon, sorry.
It's a gift certificate.
That's okay. Yeah.
Same thing as money in the bank.
Buddy, always great to see you. And I guess we'll see you later.
I'll stick around.
You stick around, buddy. And great catching up with you. And thanks for joining in. This was a lot of fun. I wish we had 10 times the amount of time.
I know, huh?
You know what I mean? It's just not, 15 minutes, it just doesn't cut it.
I know.
Hi.
Hi. How you doing?
Are you on the air yet?
Sure. Yeah. We've done 40 episodes.
I mean, right now, are we just you and I talking, or is this part of the podcast?
No, we're live, babe. We're going out to planet Earth. Yeah.
We are? Hi, planet Earth.
Hi, planet Earth.
Hi.
Hello,
it's nice
blue
to be
marble
one
people.
Of the bajillions on the planet. And thank you, gravity, for keeping me on the planet.
I'm grateful for gravity, too.
Yeah.
How you doing, darling?
Good. Happy holiday time. I just came back from Maine where I did the musical Young Frankenstein. I played Frau Blücher. He was my boyfriend.
Man, you're doing that theater stuff, that musical theater stuff. It's so fun, isn't it? Huh?
Yeah, it's not for wimps.
No. Those are tough schedules, but man, they're fun, right?
Yes, they are fun. The audiences are great. There's nothing like a live audience.
Nothing like it. So listen, the last time you were on the podcast, we had the pleasure of seeing what you had in your bag. I'm just kind of wondering what is in there today. And do you switch it out for the holidays or?
I took all the fun stuff out of my bag because I was traveling and the TSA people. Uh-huh. This is a message to all the people that work for TSA around the country. You have made my life a living hell. I know you think it's fun to go through my suitcase and look through my purse, claiming that you've seen something on your scanner. You haven't, but you've gotten word that I'm in line, and now you're dicking around with me. And this happens every time I fly. And I'm effing sick of it. And I want you all to go like lemmings to the sea and disappear. You make travel such an unhappy day for me. Just stop it. Stop it. I never have anything interesting, illegal, or dangerous in my carry-on or my purse. So stop it.
Oh, the power that they get the drunk with the power, right?
I had all those things. I had the chicken in my purse that when you squeeze it, she gives birth to another chicken. I had the eyes, the Google eyeglasses, and I had the fake nose, and I had the things to make children on airplanes stop crying or scare them even worse.
Right.
And I took it all out of my purse because TSA people don't have a sense of humor.
No, nobody does anymore. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
So what's going on with you and your son?
Oh, he's just, in robotics camp building SUVs and amazing us with his mathematics. And
how old is he now? 6?
7. He's so far beyond me now. It's just like, okay, yeah.
He's
trying to ask me a math question. I'm like, yeah, that's good, Nick. That's good. Yeah. it's he's great. Thanks for asking.
You're very welcome. In the 70s, I streaked.
Oh, I did too.
Where did you run naked? Where were you?
Haddonfield Memorial High School, 4 of us, during an assembly. We ran across the football field, and then we ran on stage. We streaked across the stage in front of the whole
God, that was very brave and maybe foolish. Did you get into big, big doo-doo trouble?
No.
No trouble.
It was a thing back then. Everybody was doing it.
Yeah, I streaked at the Playboy Club.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah.
In L.A.?
In Lake Geneva. It was the only way to top the Playgirl bunnies. Yeah, because they're in these outfits with everything pushed up and out and they're looking sexy. But, what's sexier than a middle-aged lady running naked down the hall with a red top hat on?
So I want to ask you about one of our favorite lines on the podcast. One of our favorite lines in the episodes are from you, from Babette. Do you remember having a Babette line that you particularly loved?
I can't quote it exactly, but I was trying to explain how my cat Cinnamon died.
Yeah.
and it was pretty funny.
Yep. Yeah. I remember that scene. And he fell off. He thought he was still sleeping, and then he fell off the couch and didn't move. And then you maybe kicked him, and he flew across the
room, and he
the floor, and he still didn't. And that's when I knew he was gone. Yeah, no, that was very funny. That was hysterically funny. I remember that.
I think I was running toward you. I was running toward Luke's anyway. I don't remember if you were at the receiving end, but I had to run all the way across the little park in the center of town where the gazebo is and run toward your restaurant. And when you are majorly endowed, it's very painful to run. So I held my breath the entire way while I was running. And Amy Sherman Palladino said, leave it in. So there you go.
Do you have moments even to this day where you think, oh, that was very Babette of me, like in your real life? Any similarities?
Well, in some ways, I really am Babette.
Right.
I've always dated taller guys, and I'm only 5 feet tall, and I'm highly energetic, and I'm very nosy. I sit down with somebody, I get into their business. So I'm very, very much like Babette.
Right.
Did you know that Ted Rooney, who played my husband on Gilmore Girls, and I, his father was my math teacher in high school?
Yes.
And that he and I went to the same high school and grew up in the same town?
Yes.
But as he pointed out the first day I met him, he's younger than I am, so I didn't know him in high school because he wasn't there yet.
Right. Oh, wow. Yeah, we had him on the podcast. He was terrific. He did share that story.
Yeah, he's a great guy. His dad, Ed Rooney, father of Ted Rooney, was on the Johnny Carson show one night because Ted Rooney is one of like 9 children. And so, you know, Ed Rooney was just a high school teacher. I mean, how do you feed a family of 9 kids on that? So he fed them horse meat and hoped that they didn't know the difference. It was cheaper than buying cow meat.
Oh, my goodness.
And somebody got word of it, and the Tonight Show flew him down, and he was on the Tonight Show talking about feeding his family horse meat.
With Johnny Carson.
With Johnny Carson. Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Are you going to have Rose Abdu on?
On this one?
Yeah.
No. No, I
didn't.
She's
very funny.
She's very funny, yes.
She's a very brilliant gal. I love her.
She really is, and her resume proves that at a very point. Now, speaking of Ted Rooney, we had him on the podcast. What do you remember about the scenes inside your tiny home, and would the difference between you and Ted and height get in the way of those scenes?
It didn't get in the way in real life, but it obviously got in the way in Babette's marriage to him, because when we were having the wake at our house for our cat Cinnamon, and Lorelai was standing in the kitchen with me with her legs spread apart so that she would be shorter because she was helping me with the dishes and the counters were so low. And she asked, you know, if Maury had any trouble moving into this house with me. And I said, well, yeah, he hits his head sometime on the dividers between the rooms, but he's never had a really bad concussion, so he's okay. Yeah. Yeah, she had the house built for her own height, probably never thinking she'd get married, and then she met Maury.
Right, right, right. Let me ask you this. If there was ever another reboot of Gilmore Girls and you couldn't do it, for some reason, because you were in a play or another movie and the schedule didn't work out, who would you want to play Babette?
Oh. Well, if we could dig her up, Ruth Gordon.
Because
that's who my performance is, you know, giving honor to, because she was the best character actress that ever lived.
You know what? I see that now, because we just reviewed Rosemary's Baby, because it was mentioned in the first episode. And you're right.
Yeah, I loved her. And then I got to play her daughter-in-law in the film The Great Houdinis. Paul Michael Glaser played Harry Houdini, and I played Bess's wife. And Ruth Gordon played his mother. And we made friends, and we stayed friends until she passed away. As a matter of fact, when I went to New York to do my first Broadway show, She and her husband, Garson Kanin, let me stay in their brownstone on the east side of New York City. And my next door neighbors were Katharine Hepburn and Stephen Sondheim.
Wow.
And on the morning of my birthday, there was a knock on the front door, on the door. And then, you know, the first level was the kitchen and the dining room. And then you went up a set of stairs. And then it was a living room, another set of stairs, bedrooms and bathrooms, and another set of stairs, bedrooms and bathrooms. And my best friend Pamela was upstairs with my daughter, who was turning two. And we were trying to toilet train her on a little potty chair. And so I screamed, "Pamela, I'm in my pajamas. Someone's knocking on the door. Can you come down and answer it?" And she said, "I've got Samantha on the potty chair. I can't come down." So I said, "All right." And I answered the door, and there's Katharine Hepburn standing at my front door. I mean, I think my mouth literally hit the floor. And I looked at her and I said, "Oh, Miss Hepburn, hello. I'm sorry I'm in my pajamas." She says, "Well, hello, Sally." She says, "Nora told me it was your birthday. Happy birthday, dear. I painted you a birthday card. So you take it from me. And sometime this week, why don't you come next door to my place? I'll show you all around. I'll talk to you about Spencer Tracy. And I've got my closets full of all my costumes. We'll have a wonderful time. Do you drink coffee or tea, dear?" I said, "My God, this isn't happening on my birthday. Oh, my God. Oh, my God." But I was staying in Lou Gordon's brownstone. My ears are so tiny, they're childlike, my ears, mm-hmm. that these little pods won't stay in because my ear can't accept them.
That's okay. I'm not doing much talking because you're being so great and funny. So here's a question. If you could jump back in time to filming any episode or season, what would it be?
Oh,
Gilmore Girls.
Any episode or season of the Gilmore Girls. Mm-hmm. Oh, Gilmore Girls. When did I have the most fun? Probably when we did, was it called A Year in the Life? What was it? We came back, we all hadn't seen each other in several years, and then we did those four 90-minute movies.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt so lucky. I felt like I had been invited to my high school reunion, and the reunion went on for, you know, a month. I was like a kid at Christmas dancing around the Warner Brothers lot. And yes. Rose Abdu said to me one day, "Oh, here comes one of their trolleys. What do you call those caravan things where they drive people around to take a tour of the studio?"
Yeah,
that
the
bus.
Studio, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
The tram.
Yeah. Right, right.
And she says, "Let's just stand here and give them a thrill." Because we were on our way to the steppy uppy truck where you could get snacks.
Right.
And we were admonishing one another about how we didn't need snacks, but we were getting them anyway. And then we stopped and kind of posed so to give the group on the tram a thrill. They didn't recognize either one of us. We both felt so awful. We got more snacks than we even had originally wanted. I got to tell you, every single time I came to work on that, because you worked in every episode. You were there all the time, but I was in one in every three episodes, maybe. Sometimes one in every other one. Mm-hmm. So it to me was this realization that I was still in show business, you know, because sometimes when you're a woman in this industry, you're pretty much told when you hit about 40 that you're washed up.
Mm-hmm.
So here I was on this very popular TV series and being written with dialogue that was just as brilliant as the dialogue on All in the Family. Mm-hmm. And I really felt every day that I was there that I had won the lottery. So mm-hmm. I loved all of it. I loved the scenes in Lorelai and Rory's house. I was always excited when there's something in there to do. I never, ever did a scene in her parents' home.
Oh, is that right?
Never. And I know you went to the senior Gilmore's house sometimes, but I was never in any of those scenes.
Yeah, yeah. Those were great scenes. That's a great place to shoot. So here's a fan question for you, Sally. Here's somebody typing in from the audience. Sally, what was your favorite part of playing Babette? This is from Ashley, by the way.
Oh, Ashley, thank you for asking that. I think the two favorite parts for me is that one, they let me do my very bad impression of Ruth Gordon and never called me on the carpet about it. And number two, they always let me wear my own clothes because I don't look good when you dress me in other people's clothes. So once they understood that I would bring choices, I was always so comfortable on the set in my own clothes.
Right. Right.
I know that's not the answer you were looking for, Ashley, but I was really excited to do my, you know, my Ruth Gordon kind of thing.
Oh my God.
That made me happy.
It's just all hitting me now. Cause I mean, yeah, that's what you were doing. It's fantastic. But it was an homage. It was, yes. You know, mostly you, but a little bit. That's good stuff. All right, here we go. We're gonna wrap it up by asking you a final question. What are you most thankful for from Gilmore Girls?
It sounds so selfish or all about me, but honestly, I was really grateful that I was on a show that was so good and so well-liked that I stopped being approached as, oh, there's that girl from Archie Bunker.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people didn't even remember it was called All in the Family. They'd call it the Archie Bunker Show. It was all about Archie.
Right.
And they'd come up and they'd say, you know, oh, we haven't seen you in so long. Have you retired, dear? All of that kind of condescending stuff where you want to step on their feet and walk away. but then I started getting stopped by people who watch Gilmore Girls, and it made me feel like I had come alive again in my career, because I had been hearing 30 years worth of All in the Family remarks, and now I was getting a whole new generation that would talk to me.
Right.
So, right. And that has lasted. It still seems current.
Yeah. They keep playing it.
Yeah.
Every new generation is discovering the show and falling in love with the show. And it's crazy.
I'm so glad you have me on your podcast. Should I hang around? Are you going to have us all back in a while?
Yes, we're going to wrap up the segment. You're going to come back for the fan Q&A.
All right.
Stick around.
I will, because I love you.
I love you too, very much.
And I'll see you in a little bit.
All right. Good deal, Sally. Thank you. Okay, so we're gonna go to some fan Q&A here, and here's Chris and Tiffany asking me. Okay, did you serve real food in Luke's Diner? Oh, you betcha I did. That was real cooked burgers. That was real chicken. That was real waffles. Real eggs. Real everything. Everything was real. I'm not saying it was fresh, okay? I'm not saying that. And sometimes extras did kind of, you know, break the rules and break down and start eating what we would call the prop food. And I was tempted a few times myself late at night, hungry, and Crafty was running out of food, and the pizza was gone. And, you know, you look at one of those, you know, those old burgers. It's like, who cares? Just dig in. But no, it was, to answer your question, it was all real. Everything was real. Yes. Yes, 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 indeed. Okay. Next question is from Lindy. Did the fake snow in Stars Hollow have a smell to it? Yes, absolutely it did, because it was made out of paper, and it smelled like paper. So it's just paper that's chopped up into, you know, fine, not granules, but pretty fine, tiny little pieces of paper, hundreds of millions of tiny little pieces of paper being shot through a very expensive looking and very large, cumbersome machine. And sometimes they'll just sort of rain it down from a sort of a sieve-like contraption way above you. And, you know, it's quite clever. But it does get in your ears and your nose and your mouth and your arse and all kinds of places. So, it smells like paper. That's what it smells like. There he is.
Hello there.
Man, how you doing, buddy?
I'm good. Are we live right now?
We are live, beaming out, streaming out to the world.
Wow. Cool.
Hey, say hello. Hi, everybody.
Hey there.
Hello, you beautiful people. So look, let's do a couple of questions, then you can play us your song.
Okay.
Yeah. Really looking forward to. So anyway, thanks for coming on. Great to have you. Great to see you.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
And by the way, I'm coming to your neck of the woods in February.
Are you really?
I am.
The Nashville area.
I'm coming down there. I'm going to work with some top songwriters for a whole week and do some podcasts with them and write some songs with them. And I'll let you know.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it's going to be fun, man.
Well, we've got to get together.
Yes, we will.
We'll hit the honky tonks.
Yes, we will. We will. We will indeed. So look, we absolutely loved having you on the podcast last time. What was it like strolling down Troubadour memory lane for you?
What was it like trolling down Troubadour Avenue? Oh, you're referring to
when you were on the podcast recounting your days on Gilmore Girls. What was that?
Right. Well, it was great. It went by in a flash. We got talking and we covered a lot of ground and goodness. I don't know. It's a funny thing, isn't it? I sometimes forget how many seasons, how many years passed that we were all involved with the show, you know, because it all seems to exist in some ways, at least for me, but like in one moment in some ways, you know, I don't know. And even when we went back to, you know, to Stars Hollow for the reunion, it was like that. Everybody just found their place immediately, you know? Yeah. You didn't have to find the tape on the ground. You knew where to go and everybody had a connection, you know?
Yeah. It was nice. It was nice revisiting that. It really was. We just had Sally on. She was so grateful for that opportunity to come back and do it again. And I felt the same way at the time.
Yeah.
It's like you won the lottery. It's like, really, is this happening? I mean, it's so great.
Right.
So great. Yeah. So you look very cozy in your home.
I feel very cozy. I've got the, you know, the autumnal mantle. You can see behind me. A copious amount of flint corn behind me. And
There you go.
Yeah.
How would you describe the Troubadours music and what genre would it be?
It's traveling music. It's music made for walking, for strolling, you know. Mm-hmm. I guess maybe it's because I tend to write songs when I'm on the move, you know, when I'm traveling, when I'm out there on my own. That was the hard thing to adjust to with this year pandemic. Suddenly I found myself kind of, you know, sitting at home and there's plenty of time to write songs, but something about that, you know, that kind of input that you get, you know, that stimulation of travel and seeing new places, you know, I always get a lot of ideas in that way. So I guess it's traveling music, wherever you're going, metaphorically, you know,
right,
literally.
Right. So as we get further into the series, you know, we see the Troubadour more and more.
Yeah.
Did you get to keep that neck microphone set up? And
oh, I built that. That was all my own.
That's yours.
Oh, yeah. You know, and I mean, Amy, they said, yeah, show up. You know, when I kind of showed up with my suit and my homemade sort of busking rig, you know, a little pig nose amp with a harmonica holder with a spray painted golden microphone. And I kind of rigged the whole thing. I don't know if you remember at the very beginning, that microphone went through like a little echo box and I had that, but I soon realized this thing is very heavy and I'm going to spend the afternoon walking around. So I kind of pared it down finally, but it was always heavy and I had to wear it. I didn't want to do a scene without it, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
How did the Troubadour evolve over the seasons, in your opinion? How did he?
That's a good question. I think it seems to me that this might have taken place early on, but it seemed to reach a fever pitch. I noted that my character was always angry about something, you know? I mean, maybe there's a little bit of that, you know, you sense it in Taylor. There are other characters that have, you know, that have these issues, And mine, of course, was first reveal itself, you know, when I had to like fight for my Troubadour turf, which, you know, that happened. But even later on, when I come back after being on the road with Neil Young and again, you know, kind of flying off the handle there too, you know.
Here's a storyline for maybe the next reboot. We find out that you're really Taylor's younger brother you've never met, and that the store, the candy store that he inherited
right
from his family, was supposed to go to you. So after a lengthy court battle, you kick him out of that store and you take over and he becomes the town troubadour. What do you think of that? Do I have any chance at being a store editor?
I think that's a great idea.
I'd love to see you as the new Taylor.
Wow. And I'd like to see Taylor in with my amplifier around his shoulder as well. And he will feel the pain that I have endured for so long. I made a suggestion that Taylor, like I have a place to make a suggestion. What if I think Taylor should be like in the Royal Order of Water Buffaloes, like Fred Flintstone, you know? Doesn't he seem like he should kind of like have a secret handshake and
a
stash of some kind, you know?
So I'm working on a song for Emily. Emily Kuroda, with her low internet and can't hear or can't hear me, inspired a song. Hey, Emily, I can't hear you. What are you saying to me? I want to talk to you right now. Hey, Emily. Take it, bud.
Don't be cute. Don't you mute, Emily. Don't mute me, baby. I don't know. You're tuned to the classic Masonic key of E something or another, I think.
I'm probably not tuned right. You're tuned up. Look,
have our own tuning. You know, I'm in Nashville. Nashville tuning.
Nashville tuning, right? All right. Like people that have actual talent and good ears, right? I got it. let's get to your song, man. Tell us about your song.
I'd love to. I thought it might be nice. You know, the leaves are changing here. The chill in the air. There's a winter front. A winter front making its way from one coast to the next. And along with that, I've got a look at this. This is coming out on Record Store Day. This is remember these phonographs?
I do.
You played these on your phonograph player. And this is coming out. Finally, it's on vinyl. Not just vinyl, though. It's on, look at that, green translucent vinyl.
Nice.
Yeah. And it's kind of a nice thing. You know, it came out last year digitally, but it's finally available on vinyl. A painting by myself.
Beautiful.
Truly. Beautiful. A painting. You'll see when you come to Nashville that it's just every inch of it cries out to be painted. It's a beautiful place. So I'll play you a song off that album that I actually premiered on the Gilmore Girls when we did our winter reunion.
Okay.
Like so many times, I got a call from Helen, she and Amy talking. Do you have a song that is kind of, the scene takes place in the winter, the whole episode actually. So what do you think? Anything? And I said, you know what? I do. I wrote a song some years ago. My dad said, you know, you should write a song, a seasonal song, a seasonal ballad, you know, a holiday number. I said, you know what? That's a good idea. And so I did. And lo and behold, it made its debut on the Gilmore Girls. Just like that. Serendipity, you know?
Nice. What's the name of the song?
It's called Winter Glow. I'll play it for you here.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, I give you Grant Lee Phillips playing Winter Glow.
Okay. I just got to make sure I'm situated just right, Scott. Yeah. I've got a little bar stool here and the rungs, if I can, there we go. Perfect. Okay. There we go. Perfect. Okay. And take a swig of water.
Sure.
I've been eating peanuts tonight.
No.
No. And you know how that happens? Like hours later, you realize I still got a peanut in there. I'm saving that for later. Okay.
Such a tender feeling when the candlelight all flickering in the window comes you home. And the fireplace is crackling and giving off a warming winter glow. A glow.
Nice song.
Thank you.
Beautiful. Wow.
Thanks so much.
And that was on the show. That ended up on Gilmore Girls.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. The snow's coming down, or Rice Krispies, or whatever it was. And I'm in front of the gazebo and I'm just emoting. Trying to keep my sinuses from going crazy from those, you know, whatever those things are. What are they? Like potato buds they drop from the sky when they want it to snow?
You know what? Now that you mention it, it's paper and it's that too. Yeah, I think sometimes they do use those potato buds, but I really think it's mostly paper.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Wild.
What a great song. What a great, beautiful song.
My Thanks God. So much.
What a performer in that voice and the melody. Oh my goodness.
I've got special fuel in me today. I'm full of Scotty Peas. I'm doubly caffeinated tonight.
The songwriter's choice go-to coffee for That's sure. Right. Yes. Thank you for the plug. That was wonderful. That was Thank absolutely you. Wonderful. Now, were there times when you were touring and you couldn't, and you were offered an episode, Amy and Dan reached out and, you know, can you do this episode, that episode? Sorry, no, I'm touring. I can't do it. Did that happen to you?
I don't think there was ever a time where we had that happen, funny enough. But a lot of that was because I would get a heads up usually pretty early on, you know, before the season was kicking in. And I would try to set aside that time, you know, and just hold off on touring during that particular week or two. You know, so we kind of work around each other, but we were lucky that way. I think there might have been a time where I had to recut some dialogue or some music in New York City to replace whatever I had done on the show. Because you know how that is. I mean, you're out there playing, and then an airplane flies over, and you gotta make it happen. So you know, that's all I can really recall. Though, got pretty lucky that way.
Yeah. All right, so we're gonna wrap this little session here, buddy. Thank you so much. Please stick around for the Q&A. They're gonna I'm sure the fans have many questions they want to ask you.
All right.
Thank you so much, buddy.
Okay, that's gonna do it. That's a wrap on our first annual live virtual event, Friendsgiving. We're gonna do another one real soon. We'll let you know when that is. You are the best fans on the planet. Thanks for downloading, everybody. We helped raise some money from some very worthy causes, very worthy charities. Very proud of you guys for that. Anyway, stay safe, everybody. All the best. Much love. And don't forget, follow us on Instagram at IAmAllInPodcast and email us at gilmore@iheartradio.com. Oh, you Gilmore fans, if you're looking for the best cup of coffee in the world, go to my website for my company, scottyp.com, scottyp.com, scottyp.com. Grade 1 specialty coffee.